And thanks for listening to VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Alice Bryant, and Jill Robbins. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
The delayed 2020 Olympics open in Tokyo in 1 month. As the games get closer, people are concerned that the event will not be much fun for anyone involved because of COVID-19 restrictions. Many Japanese people are still not vaccinated against the coronavirus. For much of 2021, people have been asking Japan's government to urge the International Olympic Committee to cancel the event. But in an opinion article for the Kyoto News Agency, a member of the Japanese Olympic Committee said Japan has now been cornered. The member, Kaori Yamaguchi, won a bronze medal in judo in 1988. In the article, she wrote that Japan is in a situation where we cannot even stop now. She also said, the IOC seems to think that public opinion in Japan is not important. The article is in response to the recent news that the games will be held on July 23rd as planned, and that fans will be permitted. People in Japan continue to protest the games. Some people are worried that a major international event will risk the health of the nation, which just recently started easing coronavirus restrictions. A state of emergency ended Sunday in Tokyo and 6 other areas. While COVID-19 cases are slowing in Japan, only about 7% of the population is fully vaccinated. Japan's top COVID-19 advisor is Dr. Shigeru Omi. He said it would be abnormal to hold the world's biggest sporting event in the middle of a pandemic. He added that it would be safest to have the competition without fans. He was overruled, however, by Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga. Koichi Nakano is a political science professor at Sophia University in Tokyo. He said the plan to go ahead with the games is similar to the situation of a gambler who has lost too much money. Pulling out of it now will only confirm the huge losses made, but carrying on, you can still cling to the hope of winning big and taking it all back. Right now, the official cost of the Olympics is over $15 billion. More than half of the money came from the public. The IOC is only covering about 10% of the cost. The IOC makes much of its money from broadcast payments. If the games were to be canceled, the IOC would have to pay back up to $4 billion in broadcast rights. Over a year ago, Japan was set to host what IOC President Thomas Bach called the best prepared Olympics ever. Japan built a beautiful new stadium and made other improvements, hoping to put on an event that would be costly but memorable for foreign visitors. The hope, experts said, was that people would go home and tell their friends about the great time they had in Tokyo. Now, however, the Games could close with the reputation of being an event that caused an increase in COVID-19 cases. Japan has reported more than 14,000 deaths from the disease. People who watch the Olympics on television may still think Japan put on a successful event. However, in Tokyo, it will not be the big party many people hoped for. There will be no public watching of events on large televisions. Athletes will not be permitted to go anywhere other than their hotels and their competition sites for the first 2 weeks. People watching the events in person will not be permitted to buy alcohol. Athletes will only be able to drink alcohol alone in their rooms. Dr. Tetsuya Miyamoto is the director of medical services for Tokyo 2020. He said he hopes many people choose to stay home. Otherwise, he said, the virus has the possibility of spreading. The numbers could start to explode. The opening ceremony is always an exciting event that people look forward to. Traditionally, many people wonder who will light the cauldron to start the games. But this year, the questions are likely to include, will the athletes stay apart as they march in the parade? Will they wear face coverings? Will they even attend? I'm Dan Friedel.
When they visit their mother, Barbara and Christine Colucci want to take off their face coverings and give her a kiss. Their 102-year-old mother, who has dementia, lives in a home for retired adults in the state of New York. The two women also want to have more family members in their mother's room at the same time, but current restrictions prevent that. We don't know how much longer she's going to be alive, Christine Colucci said. So please give us this last chance with her in her final months on this earth. Pandemic restrictions are easing almost everywhere, except inside many of America's nursing homes. Rules designed to protect the nation's most at-risk people from COVID-19 are still being enforced. However, 75% of nursing home residents are vaccinated, and infections and deaths have decreased sharply. Families around the country are unhappy with the rules. Hugs and kisses are banned in some nursing homes. Residents are eating meals alone and doing activities at a distance. Visits are limited and must be kept short. And visitors are not welcome if tests show that someone has the coronavirus. Family members and their supporters question the need for such restrictions when the risk of spreading the virus is low. They say the measures are just worsening older people's loneliness and increased mental and physical difficulties. 80-year-old Marion Rowenzon lives in a nursing home in Pennsylvania. She had COVID-19 and then lost part of a leg to an unrelated infection. But her daughter, Denise Gracely, said her biggest struggle is being alone.
She was having visits 6 days a week, and now she has none, Grace Lee said. Grace Lee and her sisters can now see their mother once a week. The nursing home said it plans to ease visiting rules for all residents in late June. But that is not enough. I believe it's progressed her dementia, Grace Lee said. She's very lonely. She wants to get out of there so bad. Pennsylvania's long-term care ombudsman has gotten hundreds of complaints about visitation rules this year. Kim Shetler is with the ombudsman's office. She said some nursing homes' COVID-19 rules are more restrictive than state and federal requirements. Officials have been doing what they feel is necessary to keep people safe, she said. But families are not pleased. A recent public opinion study by the group National Consumer Voice for Quality Long-Term Care found that time limits on visits remain common. They go from 15 minutes to 2 hours. Some places limit visits to weekdays. This can make it difficult for people with daytime jobs. Rowanzon's Pennsylvania nursing home has been limiting most residents to just one 30-minute visit every 2 weeks. On June 11th, the Consumer Voice and several other activist groups wrote a letter calling for an end to visiting restrictions at nursing homes. The letter was directed at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, a part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The letter said residents continue to suffer from loneliness and mental harm because of limited visits from loved ones. Activists also disagree with federal guidance on how nursing homes deal with new COVID-19 cases. The guidance says most visits should be suspended for at least 14 days. Some critics say that the suggestion leads to strong restrictions because of one or two cases. Jason Santiago is the top executive at the Manor at Seneca Hill, a nursing home in the state of New York. He told the Associated Press that being kept alone affected his residents. We've got to do things that make more sense for these residents, make more sense for these families, he said. The federal government recently eased restrictions for vaccinated nursing home residents. But New York has not followed that move. People who eat together in common spaces must remain socially distanced, for example. They also must wear face coverings. It does not matter if they are vaccinated. In addition, they must stay 2 meters apart during activities. I'm Alice Bryant.
Today we look at two words that may cause some difficulty for English learners. Both can help us describe what is happening in a place or with a person. Situation and condition often appear to have the same meaning, However, looking closer, you will find that they cannot always be used for the same purpose. The confusion grows when one word is used to define the other. The Merriam-Webster Learner's Dictionary uses the word condition in its definition of situation as all of the facts, conditions, and events that affect someone or something at a particular time and in a particular place. Recently, the word situation is appearing in news reports about reopening businesses and social events after the coronavirus health crisis. For example, Maryland's situation is getting better as it reports the second day with no COVID deaths. Actors in movies often use the word situation to warn of a problem, as Will Smith did playing Agent J in the 2002 movie Men in Black.
We're the Men in Black. We have a situation and we need your help.
There are older, much less common uses of the word situation that mean the way something is placed or to be employed somewhere.
I found a situation in one of the city's biggest companies.
Moving on to condition, we find that the basic meaning is the state in which something exists. This can refer to a person, or in the plural, to their surroundings. We use the preposition in when describing a person's physical state or health.
He is in serious condition at Washington Hospital Center.
But the meaning changes a little when the word is plural.
They found the refugees were living in poor conditions. They had no running water or electricity.
To describe someone's health or fitness, you can add in to say,
she has been training hard, so she is in good condition for the race.
But to describe someone who is not as fit as they should be, you would use the preposition out, as in this statement.
The runner is out of condition because of his injury last month.
Conditions can also mean something that you must do or accept in order for something to happen. In a contract, for example, there are often conditions for continuing the agreement.
Conditions for this contract are that the place of business remains open and the employee is under age 65.
We use the preposition on when an action depends on another action, as in this example.
The employee spoke to a reporter on condition of anonymity.
The next time someone asks you to report on your situation, you will know that you can include the word condition in your answer. Here's an example.
What is your situation?
I'm in an excellent situation, under very good conditions.
We will leave you with a song that brings us back to describing our health. This 1968 song warns of drug use leading to bad health and bad conditions. This is Kenny Rogers and the First Edition.
8 miles high, I tore my mind on a jagged sky. I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Chester A. Arthur. The letter A is for Allen, his middle name. Arthur took office because of an unexpected event. He was sworn in as vice president in March 1881 under James Garfield. But only 100 days into Garfield's term, the president was shot. he suffered for months. Arthur was not close to Garfield. The two men belonged to the same party, but they had different ideas on the issues of the day. They publicly disagreed on a number of subjects. If Garfield lived, Arthur would probably not have much power in his administration. But Garfield eventually died. By this time, it was well established that if the President of the United States dies in office, the Vice President becomes the President. So, in September 1881, Arthur became the country's chief executive. He served the remaining 3.5 years of Garfield's term. Historians say that, for the most part, Arthur performed ably and well. Chester Arthur was raised in the northeastern states of Vermont and New York. He was one of 8 children in his family. Their father was a religious leader and anti-slavery activist. Arthur attended college in New York, then taught school and studied law. But he never wanted to stay in a small town and live modestly. He wanted to live in New York City, work as a lawyer and public official, become wealthy, and enjoy the lifestyle of a gentleman. And that is what he did. Arthur advanced from an entry-level job in a law office to a leadership position in the military during the Civil War. After the fighting stopped, he worked in a good-paying job as a lawyer, and then accepted a top position in the government. For 7 years, Arthur served as the collector of the Port of New York. His job involved supervising 1,300 people. They collected large amounts of money that came from taxes on imported goods. The job had a political element, too. It was under the control of a U.S. senator from New York, Roscoe Conkling. Conkling was known as a Republican Party chief who traded political support for financial and other benefits. Arthur was never found guilty of accepting money or gifts in exchange for the help of his office, but he was closely linked to Conkling's political machine. When Rutherford B. Hayes became president in 1878, he tried to fight corruption in government jobs. He targeted Conkling and Arthur. Arthur's position as the collector of the Port of New York was one of the issues in the election of 1880. President Hayes had suspended Arthur from the job. To get it back, Arthur and Conkling supported an effort to re-elect former president Ulysses S. Grant. But another candidate won the Republican Party's presidential nomination, James Garfield. Garfield and Arthur were not natural allies. Although they were both Republicans, they represented different points of view. Political leaders hoped to unite the party. So when Garfield was chosen as the presidential candidate, they added Arthur as the vice presidential nominee. The effort to unite the party worked well enough to win the election, but relations between the two men were uneasy. One of Garfield's first acts was to appoint someone for Arthur's old job in New York. The new president wanted someone who was not loyal to Conkling, so he gave the position to one of his supporters instead. In protest, Conkling resigned from the Senate. But then events took an unexpected turn. Garfield was shot by a mentally unbalanced man who believed the president owed him a government job. and Chester A. Arthur became president. When Arthur took office, he had the public image of being an experienced political operator. Most people believed he cared only about supporting the aims of a small part of the Republican Party. Instead, President Arthur took an independent position on several issues. In opposition to most of his party, Arthur supported legislation to reform the country's civil service. It aimed to clean up corruption in government and took away some of the ability of politicians to give government jobs to their supporters. To be fair, in the short term, the act helped Arthur's party. Arthur also broke with the Republican Party leadership to support a reduction in tariffs, and he strongly argued to limit spending federal money on projects that helped only a few areas or businesses. Instead, he wanted to cut taxes so more people would profit from the government's surplus. Finally, Arthur vetoed an anti-immigration act from Congress. The measure proposed banning Chinese immigrants for 20 years. Arthur argued that the Chinese had improved the American economy by helping build a railroad across the country. He also did not want to hurt potential trade with China. However, when Congress offered to ban Chinese immigrants for only 10 years, Arthur agreed. In addition, his administration banned immigrants who were considered poor, criminal, or mentally insane. Perhaps Arthur's most memorable act as president, however, was to redecorate the White House. He did not like its appearance inside, so he asked one of New York's top designers, Louis Tiffany, to make the home brighter and more stylish. In the newly remodeled rooms, Arthur held parties with fine food and drink for elite guests. He was known as the gentleman boss. Observers then and now say that Arthur served well as president. He was a solid leader after the difficult years of the Civil War and Reconstruction. But Arthur did not live much beyond his presidency. Shortly into his term, he learned he had a serious kidney disease that would likely kill him. As a result, he did not try hard to get reelected. Instead, after finishing his term, he returned to his home in New York. Arthur tried to work as a lawyer, but he soon became too sick. His wife had died of malaria before he became president, and he liked to spend his free time fishing or with friends instead of with his children. But in his last months, he could not enjoy those activities either. He died at home at the age of 57. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.